18 votes that we need in order to bring a bill to the floor. In the meantime, we have met with the administration. There has been commitments that they will not proceed to deport the Dreamers.
We're going to have to leave it there. Congressmember Nydia Velazquez, thanks so much for being with us. New York Congressmember born in Puerto Rico. I'm Amy Goodman with Nermeen Shea.
Good morning. It's 7:59. You're listening to KBOO Portland. And coming up, it's Voices from the Edge. Guest host Lisa Loving talks to organizers from Portland Tenants United about yesterday's city council vote on the growing housing crisis. This KBOO program has been made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Portland Saturday Market. From our hands to yours, celebrating 44 years of American arts and crafts, freshly prepared foods with an international flavor, and local music every Saturday and Sunday from March through Christmas Eve in Waterfront Park. Local artisans, international food, live music. PortlandSaturdayMarket.com.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of Artwork Rebels Tattoos for Harvey Relief event, Sunday, October 8th at 12 p.m. to 8 p.m. at Artwork Rebels in Portland. The Artwork Rebels Tattoos for Harvey Relief will be donating 100% of the funds raised to the Texas Organic Farmers and Gardeners Association by having fresh flash designs available priced from $100 to $200. Again, that's Artwork Rebels Tattoos for Harvey Relief event, Sunday, October 8th at 12 p.m. to 8 p.m. at Artwork Rebels, 528 Southwest 3rd Avenue, Portland, Oregon. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the 3rd Annual Purple Mile Walk on Saturday, October 7th at 10 a.m. in Portland. The 3rd Annual Purple Mile Walk is hosted by Self Enhancement Inc. as a way to kick off Domestic Violence Awareness Month by showing solidarity and celebrating survivors. Again, that's the 3rd Annual Purple Mile Walk on Saturday, October 7th at 10 a.m. at SEI Community and Family Programs. That's at 4803 Northeast 7th Avenue in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
You are listening to KBOO Portland. This is Voices from the Edge Talk Radio. Sitting in for Joanne Hardesty, I'm Lisa Loving, and today, Portland Tenants United were agitating at the Portland City Council yesterday, talking about RELO. Seamus Cook?
Hello.
Sheena Sisk?
Howdy.
Thanks for being here, and let's just start right out and ask, what is RELO? I love saying that.
All right. RELO is the Historic Relocation Ordinance. It passed back in February. Definitely kind of forefronted by new Commissioner Chloe Udaly, who was put in place after the cry that was heard by, you know, renters really feeling the pain in Portland and deciding to do something about it and creating a force to make some really profound changes. So what the relocation ordinance does is if you receive a no-cause eviction or if you receive a rent increase of 10% or more, and that rent increase or that no-cause eviction forces you to be displaced from your home, if you live in Portland proper, your landlord now has to pay you relocation assistance.
Specifically, you get as much as $4,500 if you live in a 3-bedroom or more house. In a studio, you get $2,900. So those are, that amount is kind of put out there to ensure that you can move safely without avoiding poverty or homelessness.
Okay, so now this was discussed before the city council yesterday. What was going on there? Can you talk about how was this hit in the city council meeting?
Well, yesterday the discussion was the extension of relocation because it was passed initially as an ordinance of emergency. So the discussion was to extend it or make it permanent. And PTU was there to demand that it be made permanent yesterday. And so that was part of the discussion, to extend it or to make it permanent, or how they're going to do what exactly.
Mm-hmm. We were also pushing for that threshold to be lower than 10%, because as we know, renters are definitely being displaced when rents are being increased at less than 10%. So we were really pushing for that to be at a lower threshold. And there's also a small landlord loophole in the ordinance right now. And so we're really pushing to get that out of there.
Okay, so tell us, what did happen at the meeting then? What was the upshot? I've been looking around for stories covering that meeting last night in the local media. There's almost nothing. Mm-hmm. I'm just going to come out and say I haven't seen a single thing. I'm guessing that there's something somewhere, but I haven't. I don't even know who covered that. Seems important. So it's on you, our new reporters. Tell us, what happened at the meeting yesterday? What was your sense of it?
Well, it was amazing. Dozens and dozens of people testified in favor of PTU's demand.
43 on the list.
43 testifiers, dozens and dozens of more people
overflow
in support. Mm-hmm. So there is a lot of community outcry that we need this made permanent now and improved. A lot of people discussed the exemption and how they were hurt by it. So if you live in a house that with your landlord owning only one unit, your landlord doesn't have to pay you relo right now. And this means that as much as 25% of renters in Portland don't get relo if they are forced out of their house. And so we had people testify about the outcome of that. Some folks were made homeless by not getting relocation assistance. And you know, this is a housing state of emergency that they extended yesterday, which means we want them to take action, actually, and not just rhetoric.
All right. If you just tuned in, it's Voices from the Edge. I'm Lisa. We're talking with Seamus and Sheena. We're talking about affordable housing in Portland. And we're going to open up the phone lines. Are you a renter? How are these issues hitting you? Okay. The number to call is 503-231-8187. You know, I was thinking recently how 6 years ago, we were watching the big banks foreclose on homeowners by the dozens, even more so in our area. And we even had people who were cancer survivors, veterans, who were getting dragged out of their houses, which then stood empty for periods of time. Now there's thousands of people living in the street, and people are having to run serpentine trying to figure out policies to keep people inside. Now, Portland Tenants United, you guys have done a lot. You've done a lot on policy. You've done a lot on grassroots organizing. Can you, I don't want to put you on the spot too much, but can you talk a little bit about some of the things literally over the past year, right? You guys have done a lot. Can you list some of the things on your laundry list of actions you've done and even successes you've had or lack of success? Catch us up with you overall as an organization.
Well, I think the main thing that we've done is really changed the public discussion around this, because prior to us, I feel like there's been, well, first of all, there was no discussion on rent control. So we brought that into the public domain.
Was that on the state level?
They discussed it this past session.
In the Oregon State Legislature.
Yeah, and specifically they wanted to remove the ban on rent control, which right now the state exempts the cities from doing anything about rent control. So we wanted to remove that ban, which the Democrats were unable to do, unfortunately.
And that a lot of lobbying against that. Now,
there's
I want to hover over this one for a minute, because this is so common sense. It's so common sense. And the forces that derailed it were sort of shocking. I mean, can you talk about what were the obstacles? What did derail that that rent control, if you could?
Well, I also think kind of the history of why there is a ban on rent control is important to talk about. And, you know, it's also the reason why we're seeing it being discussed now.
Tell us.
You know, we're really taught to believe these pro-profit economists' arguments that, you know, rent control hurts renters. But if you actually look at the history of when rent control was banned in the state of Oregon in the 70s, it was actually due to a force of landowners coming together and putting this, you know, like infiltrating the state with money and power to enact these changes. So I don't think it's a coincidence that now that we are building tenant power and tenant solidarity, that we're now starting to see these new discussions.
It makes total sense to remove the ban and allow cities to do their own policies. And once that discussion started, the landlord lobby just went nuts, and they threw tons and tons of money at different legislators. You know, the Democratic Senator Rod Monroe is the worst offender in terms of how much money he's taking and the barriers that he imposed on the rest of the Democrats, but they allowed it to happen, didn't call him out, and that's why the bill failed, which is a travesty. You know, there's a statewide housing emergency. It doesn't affect just the Tri-County. It affects entire Oregon, Bend, and the South, and Medford, Ashland area. You know, different regions along the coast all have the same crisis, and they did nothing about it.
Now, that's one thing. But again, my problem, whenever I have Portland Tenant United on the air, I'm like, oh no, they did 10 other things. What? Where's the list? Can you keep going through the roll of things that the organization has tackled over the past year and a half?
We can talk about, you know, the different unionizing attempts.
Unionizing the apartment complexes.
Yeah, there's been a couple of apartment complexes that have reached out to us with, you know, grotesque rent increases or, you know, landlords not giving basic repairs or, you know, all the stereotypical issues creating this like really beautiful community of these tenants coming together and fighting for their needs and their wants, and these huge property management companies who, you know, at first when talking to us would, you know, call these leases non-negotiable, here it is, emailed it out, sign or don't sign, decide, those were air quotes, mm-hmm. you know, refuse to meet with tenants. And there was one fateful morning where we scheduled an appointment with the property manager. We were marching up to meet with them. And at first they were like, nope, there's no meeting here. We're actually not going to do this. And then, we sent out our press releases, and KTU showed up, and they were right there at the door asking for interviews for the property manager. And at the same time, we had organizers in the streets with huge banners, you know, calling out this property manager's name, and everyone was honking in the intersection, and the property managers could see this action in the street, and it was like, right away, oh, right this way to our conference room.
The end result was that we did, in fact, negotiate a lease. And, you know, that's one of the victories that we want people to know about, that you can negotiate your lease, especially if you have support from the community and your neighbors. Everything's negotiable via power, and we've kind of taught ourselves that as well. You know, yesterday at City Council, for example, you know, like relocation assistance was one of our major victories, if not the major victory. You know, we demanded that as part of the campaign for Club U Daily, and she adopted our demands. And Ted Wheeler also adopted some of our demands for our housing Bill of Rights, Tenants Bill of Rights, sorry. And so getting relocation passed was a huge victory. Also, the city passed a very important a new office of landlord-tenant affairs, which has not been, that's not the name yet. They're still kind of forming that. But that new office, there's a ton of potential there to help renters, and we hope that the city funds it more than they have thus far in order to make it a strong voice for renters.
If you just tuned in, I'm Lisa Loving, sitting in for Joanne Hardesty. Today, we're speaking with Seamus and Sheena from the Portland Tenants United. We're talking about the big meeting at the Portland City Council yesterday, where on the agenda was further extending the housing emergency to address continuing homelessness issues, and also extending the sunset of mandatory relocation assistance for involuntary displacements of tenants. Now, just to keep this stuff straight in my head, it's early in the morning. I haven't had enough coffee. I haven't even refreshed my lipstick yet. But they did extend the sunset for mandatory relocation assistance, but they did not extend it to what are called small landlords, right? Have I got that straight?
Right. They extended it for 6 more months, and we were really demanding that the small landlord loophole be taken out, and instead the commissioners, especially Mayor Wheeler, thought it best that this decision be made very rationally with the advisory committee.
Without urgency. And so they kicked the can down the road a bit to this committee that has a disproportionate number of property owners and landlords. There's only two actual renters on it. And so that's part of what we were saying is this committee is, it's bunk because it's not proportionate to the city.
What is this committee called?
It was called the Relocation Advisory Committee.
And
so their job was to put forth a hopefully consensus proposal, which is not going to happen, of course, because of the
makeup of the panel. Mm-hmm,
right. Mm-hmm. And so that's why we were, you know, telling the city council that committee is not going to do its job. We need some action now. They also yesterday extended the state of emergency. So we were like, take some action as you declare emergency more. Luckily, Chloe Udaly, Commissioner Udaly, did put forth an amendment that would have struck it down the loophole. Nick Fish initially hinted that he would support such destruction of the loophole if ADUs were exempted. But ultimately, it came down to, I think he withdrew his amendment, mm-hmm. and Chloe was defeated, and the rest of the council just kind of sat there and didn't think it's so urgent.
What is an ADU?
Additional dwelling unit. Okay. So like any separate unit that you build attached
to
your house.
Property.
Yeah.
Right. So I know that one of the things that as I worked in the KBOO Evening Newsroom last year, this issue of tenants' rights, it exploded in so many different ways, right? Mm-hmm. And one of the other biggest ways was how many people froze to death in the street during the cold snap in January, right? And I think it's possible. I read somewhere that it's currently October. Okay.
It's
and
true.
So
yeah.
What is your sense of like what programs or policies or anything that's in place to keep the same thing from happening again this winter? And that's not your job, but just your set as advocates, as empathetic people who are actually literally trying to reweave the fabric of our communities, because that's what it looks like to me. What is your sense of what's different now than was compared to last year?
We're not experts on the whole shelter situation, so that's a big piece of it, of course. You want shelter space to get people off the streets if they want to be or need to be. But really, the other piece, the huge piece that is often ignored by the housing advocates is that if rent is affordable and evictions aren't a thing and people aren't displaced, then homelessness can be mitigated. And those on the streets, if rent is affordable, can get into housing. So, you know, these issues are interwoven deeply. And so not to take action yesterday, I think, was criminal, considering the weather is changing and that people in the meantime will be displaced because of this loophole. And those folks who are displaced and become homeless and vulnerable, you know, that's on city council.
Okay. If you just tuned in, this is Voices from the Edge Talk Radio. Sitting in for Joanne Hardesty, I'm Lisa Loving. We're speaking with organizers with Portland Tenants United. We're talking about what the heck just happened at the Portland City Council yesterday, where the councilors agreed to extend certain policies and programs, but they didn't really take it to the fridge, as some people might say, the bridge, whatever. There are things they didn't do. And this is Talk Radio. If you're listening right now, that means you should consider calling us and participating in this conversation. Are you a renter? How's this issue hitting you? What is your sense of what the city needs before the ice storms come back? I think they are coming back. Call me a nut. Anyway, the number to call is 503-231-8187. Don't wait till the last 2 minutes to call, okay? Don't do that. Don't play that game over here. Call now and ask your question, because really, I'm interested now. I want to sort of shift the frame and say, why is this housing issue so key? I mean, we deal with so many issues around here. There's so many issues. We can't even walk down the street some days, right? There's so many issues. What's the place in our overall social mosaic where the lack of affordable housing is really key?
Well, I'll say that, you know, this issue of the rent crisis specifically has been so ignored for so long. It's been a generational issue that people have been displaced from the African-American community in Portland. But now that it's just everywhere, it's hard to ignore. But I think housing, to answer your question, housing in general is often limited to affordable housing. We need to build more affordable housing. And any politician at any time says that because you have to, because there's a homeless crisis. But really, those are long-term solutions, and we need immediate solutions to the crisis right now. And that's where you have tenants' rights being up at the forefront. And because the city is right now 50% or more of renters and expected to be much more in the near future, then this issue is going to be, until we fix it, it's going to be the issue. You know, everyone who's a renter is very vulnerable right now. They feel it in their bones. They fear the next rent increase. And relocation assistance has helped people, but it's still displacing people. Your landlord can still give you a $1,000 rent increase in Portland. You get relocation assistance, but then you're still displaced. And then where do you go? You know, you go to Troutdale, you go to Vancouver, Hillsborough, you know, and it's really ruining lives.
The other thing that I always want to point out, and people don't think about it, here in Oregon, we just passed HB 2355, which is the End Profiling Act. People think it's the Police Profiling Act, but it's not. It's the End Profiling Act because one of the ways that white people get profiled by the police is by housing status, right? It's one of the places where white people get profiled, and I think it's important. And again, you reminded me, Seamus, how this issue around the housing and people being secure and not having to live on the street, it actually has, it's its own skyscraper. It has so many parts. Because here, as we talked about earlier, we've talked about, first it was, again, it was about the banks, right? I have to keep coming back to this. People, we forget our own history even 10 minutes ago. After the Occupy, part of the Occupy movement was trying to draw attention to the corporate sector and the strong role that the banking sector had in housing and houselessness, right? So first we were looking at these great big mortgage crises, and Wells Fargo, some of these companies paid like $40 billion fines, but they made like $800 billion on the mortgage crisis. They made money. It was like the cost of doing business. So there's the corporate sector part of it, but then there's the part where, houseless people in mental health crisis who won't, during the ice storm, they won't come to a shelter because they don't feel comfortable there. They're afraid, right? There's so many parts of the housing piece, but I can't help thinking that the renter issue is right in the heart of it. Mm. And one of the things that's happening is you have that corporate sector. I mean, we spoke about the banks, but in Portland, in our area, we have retirement funds is it CREF? Or is it TIAA, the retirement fund that bought an apartment building in Portland for $40 million or something. And it's for the retirees that live around the country. It's their investment. It's like we've even institutionalized throwing people out on the street. We've institutionalized it within retirement funds. So there are people in New Jersey and on the East Coast that are retired teachers and nurses and stuff like that. And their retirement is coming from people throwing people on the street in Portland, Oregon. And that stuff is deep. I mean, there's actually been interesting coverage of that, I think, in the Business Journal. But I mean, now I'm just hovering now. This thing becomes overwhelming.
You know, on a smaller level, about investments and housing, you know, we've been taught basically that there is no safe investment except for housing. That's the only way that average people, like middle class people, I'd say, can make an investment and help their retirement. And I think that has been a longstanding thing. But now, because of the price gouging that has been allowed because of the market, the housing market in Portland, this whole new dynamic has taken place where, you know, the small landlord has gotten really greedy, the big landlord has gotten greedy, and they don't view their tenants as people. They're just like, you know, dollars. And it's kind of turning people into these new animals that will say vicious things about their tenants and not recognize that they deserve housing stability. If your investment is my home, there's a conflict there. You know, you need to treat your investment as my home and me as a person living in my home. So without that, there is a major conflict.
It's like the gold rush of 1849.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Absolutely.
People lose their minds and they start thinking about they just think about money and profit.
You know, we have landlords approach us on the street as we're going to street fairs and whatnot, and they ask us about relocation assistance, and why in God's name would I have to pay you to leave my property? And when you tell them, sir, your property is my home, and that affects my life drastically if I'm displaced. It costs a lot of money for me to move, and it shakes up my family. And they sometimes get it. Oh, wow, you're actually people, and you matter as well. You know.
Right. If you just tuned in, this is Voices from the Edge Talk Radio. I'm Lisa. We're here with Seamus and Sheena, and we're talking about renters' rights. We're talking about what happened with the relocation ordinance at City Council yesterday, and no one has called. I feel like a pledge drive now. It's a pledge drive. No one's calling. I'm not even asking you to give any money. The number to call is 503-231-8187. Have you ever even heard of the RELO? Where do you get your media about what's happening with the housing in the city of Portland? Because, again, I'm still looking around for a story about what happened at the city council meeting yesterday, and I'm coming up empty. And that's not to say that it isn't out there. But I did want to kick it back to you all. You've done a lot. Portland Tenants United has done a lot to educate voters and people, but you've done a lot to educate media too. Do you think about that? What do you think of the media coverage of these issues? I've seen some very good coverage, but this morning I'm looking at empty hands. But what is your take on that? What were you going to say?
I love organizing with Portland Tenants United for many reasons, and one of them is our openness to reaching out to corporate media and using them for what we can use them for. That being said, a lot of times when they do show up, which many times they do, like they are attracted to events that are under our name or under our cause. But I have also noticed that running theme of the coverage being extremely one-sided or weak, and that has been an issue. I believe at the RELO hearing yesterday, there were maybe two channels that showed up. I don't remember which ones they were. But for the most part, they do come. We could definitely spend some time slamming more outlets than others, and we kind of have learned what to expect from each of them.
The different media outlets have different personalities. They are certainly owned by different masters, if we could say that. But it is kind of remarkable. You were going to say something, though, Seamus, about media.
Well, they're attracted to high, creative actions and actions where there's going to be politicians there. So yesterday, for example, we had several kind of big shots politicians, our candidates who were testifying in favor of our demands, including Diego Hernandez, who's a rep in East County. Shamia Fagan and Casey Jama are both running for the Senate seat in East County, and they testified in favor of making the policy permanent. And so when people like that get involved, the media kind of follows sometimes, and Chloe's kind of a loose cannon. She doesn't follow the traditional track that she's told to follow. So
I could be mistaken, but I think all three of those candidates are actually residents of East County. I could be mistaken,
no, it's
but
true.
I think at least two of them are. And so we do have some callers. Thanks, callers. Yay! We've got Morgan. Morgan, what's on your mind today?
Hello?
Hey, Morgan, turn your radio off. What's on your mind today? Hey, Morgan, are you there? Right on. Let's go to the next caller. Carolina's on the line. Hey, Carolina. Carolina?
Hi. Yeah, Carolina.
All right. What's going on today?
I was just interested in the history of rent control. I know you started touching on it, and then the conversation kind of veered. If there's any time to just cover that a little bit and the arguments that are pro and against it, I'd be interested to hear from the perspective of your guest.
Okay, so we're not against it, so I'm not sure if we're going to be able to make that argument. Would you like to address that? Is there anything else about, who invented the idea of rent control? Where does it work really great, and anything else that you've got about it?
Well, right now in the country, there's over 200 cities that have rent control ordinances. And rent control, covers a diverse kinds of policies that ultimately regulates the price of rent. A lot of the mainstream economists will say it doesn't work, even though in those 200 cities it seems to be working just fine for renters. It doesn't work for landlords, and our press typically will give you the perspective of the business owner. So people who have rent control in, let's say, the Bay Area or New York, they're very happy to be in those apartments because they have housing stability. So if you look at things from an economist's point of view, should you treat housing like you treat widgets? I would argue no. Like, there's housing and healthcare, we shouldn't treat those as commodities. They deserve, like, they're a special kind of commodity that, you know, we have to actually protect and limit the price gouging component.
Right. I lived in Los Angeles for 7 years, and I didn't even know that the reason I felt so secure wherever I lived was because of rent control. my rent went up maybe 3% a year. Sometimes it just didn't go up at all. But that is the law in LA. Your rent cannot go up more than 3% a year. And you know, I moved when I wanted to move in Los Angeles. Whereas as soon as I moved back home to Portland, you know, I've moved two times now, and I've only lived here 3 years. And it's also telling, you know, people look to places with rent control and they say, look how high the rent is. But what needs to be considered is that rent control has always been in place after there's been a very saturated market with the profiteers taking advantage of the profits.
It's often a reaction to high rent. Mm-hmm. So people who say it causes high rent, that's just stupid. You know, it's a reaction.
It comes because of the high rent. You know, whenever we have this part of this discussion, I always think of all the people living in domestic violence situations who don't leave because they don't think that there's anywhere they can go.
Yes.
Anyway, so we have another caller. Thanks, Carolina. Daniel's on the line. Daniel, what are you thinking about today?
Well, I'm kind of coming from a different side. I just want to really tell the your pretty much your guests how great they are and how I appreciate them working for us and fighting the fight on the battleground, because, you know, someone who's lived in Portland all his life, this is a pretty sensitive issue, because I've definitely seen the influx. I've been lucky to somewhat avoid it throughout my life. Let me just say I did have a great landlord on 60th and Gleason. That, you know, in 6 years, he didn't raise the rent once on us. It was a beautiful hardwood floor, double closet area. And he was a new landlord. He was one of those new guys, a young man who just kind of inherited his first fourplex. And it seemed like he was going the right way. He was Portland kind of bred. He knew what was going on. And I got to tell you, it would be great if you guys had some awards maybe for people like that. Where, you know,
good landlords.
There's a way to kind of put down, hey, these guys are some of the angels out there that make, you know, 6 years of my life where I got to stabilize myself, ask a woman in the marriage, you know, come home, put my head to sleep, rest well, and then, you know, take that extra 10 hours of work money and put it towards my life in Portland instead of some landlord in New York or equity forum in Los Angeles. It is scary, and I've seen heard some horror stories around me, like rent being increased every 3 months and then trying to make an extra $60, which, you know, on a minimum wage, that's 6 hours. And people who can't ask for that work already would have taken it if it's around. And it becomes a scramble. We had to move from the 60th block. We found a home just in the last market here on 160th and Gresham. So it's kind of like, you know, we're stretching ourselves out to still be Portlanders, but it's getting harder and harder, and especially for all our friends. So either way, I just wanted to tell you, I love you guys. I think you really are doing some amazing things. I do understand.
Thank you, Daniel.
And I do understand capitalism a little bit with the renters control situation. It's kind of like, yeah, you got to have an open market. But at the end of the day, you know, this is a sensitive. Resting your head is the biggest thing for me. Just rest your head from the stress of life for 8-9 hours and then deal with the crap again. Thank you.
Well, let me remark on the good landlord piece. Actually, yesterday at City Council, there was a lot of landlords who testified in favor of tenant protections. And so, and not all landlords are bad, you know, and the argument that relocation assistance is bad for landlords is it's only bad for greedy landlords. So landlords who want to raise the rent over 10% every year, landlords who want to no-cause evict families for no reason, yes, those are people who are affected by this. But good landlords who have, you know, morals and don't jack up the rent because they can and don't no-cause evict families because they can, they are not affected by this at all. They don't have to pay relocation assistance because their tenants are happy and stay a long time.
And we have a couple more callers. We have Robert on the line. What's going on with you today, Robert?
Hello, Lisa, and hey. Big up to Shayna, to Seamus and Sheena, the hard work you guys are putting in. Appreciate you.
Thank you.
I'm one of the lucky ones. When I got married in 88, my wife and I, we said we're going to get a house. We got a house. We're good and lucky. But if I was anywhere in Portland as a renter right now, it would just be, it's scramble time. It's scramble time. It's amazing. I'm seeing how my city is changing, and not always for the better. The prices are tough as heck, Seamus and Sheena. You guys know. One thing that I'm curious about, and if I was a renter, I would love to see and become a part of your organization and fight hard for rent control. I'm going to fight hard for rent control myself to help the renters in the city. But I would love to see examples of renters and rent control organizations, renter organizations like you guys, and victories. I'd like to see victories in different cities across the U.S. Tell the renters some of the victories and how they can get a grip on this freaking rent control. And I'll take the answer off the air. I'm rooting for you guys. Good luck.
Thanks, Robert. And we did talk about some victories, but you can never talk about them too much. So actually, yesterday, the city council did extend the emergency, the housing emergency, and they did extend the RELO that we're talking about. So those were actually what we're talking about is victories. We the advocates would have just wished that the council would get rid of the loophole that allows small homeowners, renters.
It's those who own one apartment unit is who it exempts. And to answer his question, we expect to have another victory on December 7th when the council reconvenes.
Six.
And at that time, we hope and we expect and we need the community to mobilize in favor of getting the exemption removed for those landlords. And hopefully we can also get another victory soon to, you know, lower the threshold from 10% to 5% or anything below 10%. Because right now...
That's the how much the rent can be raised before that kicks in? Mm-hmm.
Correct. Okay. 10% or more increase, you can if you get that, you are displaced, you can get relocation assistance. But we heard a lot of testimony about folks who are getting 9.9 increases all over the city.
Mm-hmm. And so, their utilities increasing, and so actually receiving more than 10% increases in their housing costs, and you know, therefore being displaced, but then not being eligible for relocation because, as of now, those utility increased costs aren't covered in the ordinance.
Mm-hmm. And the rent is already too damn high, so the people are already cost burdened across the city, and a 9.9 increase every year is not sustainable for anybody, or for most of us, anyways. So there's more work to do. Much more work to do.
Robert, I want to say this too, just from me to you. I know you. One of the things I really admire the most about Portland Tenants United is that they actually, I think the biggest victory of all, and this is just my personal opinion, I'm talking like my friends are not in the room here with me. I think their biggest victory is actually putting this issue on the big board. Right? Because really, in past years, this houselessness issue didn't just show up out of nowhere. This has been cooking for years. And who's covered it? Who's made it an issue? Who's agitated, really? Off and on, randomly scatter stuff. But this organization actually has galvanized a whole bunch of other people, places, and things to make this issue, Robert, to really put it on the policy agenda at the city. We got tons of callers. We got the callers now.
Oh, I wanted to say briefly to Robert, you know, I would love to get more into more examples nationally and international of, you know, of how rent control and other pro-tenant policies have come about. And I can just tell you that the running theme of these wins is when tenants come together and fight in large numbers. And if you want to organize with us, Robert, you can come on over. We would love to, you know, one of the things that's in the works is, you know, some more like video presentations, movie nights that present some of these examples of these victories around the world. And I think, Robert, you're the bottom liner for that event.
And I actually think that Robert could do that because I know Robert. And I just want to wrap this one up, Robert, because I do. It's rare that we have good things to talk about. I hate to say that. I thought also one of PTU's really big victories that just made me excited was when they started organizing entire apartment complexes, which I think started last year, but it may have started the year before, and actually was able to literally, as an organization, negotiate with the management company a totally different lease agreement for all those folks. So there's actually, PTU's got a big list of victories, and thanks for asking, because it's fun to talk about stuff that works. I almost just cursed. Don't curse on the air, friends. We have Kristen on the line. Kristen, what's going on?
Good morning. I just want to say the biggest thank you to Seamus and Sheena and Margot and all of y'all over there at PTU. We see you, us renters out here working for us, and it just, you know, it allows me to be able to work on other issues in my activism and know that you have my back. And you guys are awesome in person. I did the flash mob last December with you, and you were so fun.
Where was that again? The flash mob? Where was that?
Yeah.
Oh, gosh. Apple Store. We shut down the Apple Store.
Robert, are you listening? It was hilarious. I know, but it was hilarious.
Yeah.
Just talking about
the work.
Things.
The work that y'all do is so thankless, especially the, you know, having to figure out the egos and negotiations around different politicians. And I appreciate you so much. And thank you for being there. And y'all you just keep trucking, and it amazes me. So thank you for having my back.
Awesome. Thanks, Kristen.
Thank you.
I also want to kind of congratulate, you could tell I'm a fan of PTU. I want to congratulate your organizers for having the courage to tackle the media and actually get some good stories out there. Because I can think of a couple of institutions, media institutions, that freak me out. They kind of scare me with their tone. Mm. And if they called, oh gosh, I have been called by them before, and I almost had an anxiety attack. And you've worked productively to actually turn around negativity in the media. I'm putting that out. I've seen that. That's just my personal opinion. So to me, people are always talking about social change, but they don't really organize to take over the media. Yeah. And to me, that's always the hanging by spit. What are you doing over there? Anyway, that's just my personal feeling about it. And we have more callers. Nancy, what's going on with you today?
Hi. I've seen many senior citizens that are homeless lately. I had a woman in the grocery store, I overheard her talking to another man in a wheelchair, asking, where can I find affordable housing? And she was saying how she got kicked out of her house of many years because, you know, her husband died and she couldn't afford the taxes, and she's living on Social Security. And she's wandering around wondering where to live. And my neighbor, same thing happened to her. Her husband was disabled, and once he passed away, she had nowhere to... She was living last winter in the snow, parked in front of her house, living outside in her car because she couldn't pay the taxes, and she was literally living in front of her house on the street. And I think more stories need to be done about this. It's happening right here in Portland. It's really upsetting that people that have owned a home for 30, 40 years are now living on the street because they can't afford the taxes. And we're just creating more and more homeless people.
Mm-hmm. You know, it's interesting. It's interesting you said that, Nancy, because in 1987, I first moved to the city of Portland, and I moved to Northwest Portland. Can you imagine? It was one of the cheapest places to live. It's hard to imagine now. And it was filled with seniors. There was, you know, you see those beautiful apartment buildings there, those vintage apartment buildings. They were all filled with seniors living on a fixed income. And I lived in this falling down apartment building. It was really falling down. And it was owned by a senior citizen. And we watched while systematically, this is my experience living in the city of Portland. Companies started buying those buildings, they started fixing them up, and the seniors got displaced. And people killed themselves. Senior citizens killed themselves.
What can we do about it?
Right? And this was years ago. So it's funny, because if this was your family and you did this to a senior citizen in your family, you'd be charged with elder abuse. But the tax system can do it, or the city can do it, and they're not charged with anybody's abuse. Seamus was going to say something about it.
Well, there's also like the complete lack of action around it. You know, people like to talk about homelessness as being a serious issue, but there's not really bold action to fix the problem. As I said earlier, one huge piece of the puzzle here is the rent crisis. You keep people in their homes. Rent control does do that. You actually tackle this issue effectively. You keep people in their homes. You make rent affordable so people can get off the street and into homes. So those two pieces of the puzzle need to be tackled aggressively. Yes, everybody talks about building more affordable housing, and yes, we should do that. Everyone always talks about that. It takes years. It's very expensive. There's other ways to do that as well. But right now, to fix the housing crisis right now, we need to take much more bolder action around the rent control piece and the rent issues in general.
Mm. And we have another. I'm sorry, Nancy. We're gonna go to another couple caller. I think we have all the lines full. But Nancy actually put a really bubbling pot on the table, and I really appreciate her. Now we've got Martin. Is that you, Martin?
Yeah.
What's up?
I'm here. I want to thank your guests for the work they do, and like other callers, I think you're doing a very needed and great job. And
thank you.
I'm 75 years old. I'm living on Social Security, and my rent went up. I was living in St. John's, and I was in an unsustainable situation. But luckily, I was on a wait list for a subsidized apartment, and I got that apartment just in time. So I'm one of the lucky ones.
Yeah.
And I put some time in for CAT, Community Alliance of Tenants, once a week, and I listen to their voicemails and kind of sort them out as kind of a triage situation, and I hear a lot of many stories from people with rent increases that they can't sustain, can't take care of.
Mm-hmm.
And then landlords who don't fix the property up and so forth. So I just wanted to be one of the ones who thank your people on the your guests there.
Thank you, Martin.
Thank you, Martin.
If you just tuned in, I'm Lisa Loving, sitting in for Joanne Hardesty. This is Voices from the Edge Talk Radio. Today, we're talking with Portland Tenants United, who were agitating at the Portland City Council yesterday, talking about the relocation ordinance, the historic relocation ordinance, which was extended for 6 months. But it wasn't exactly what I'm just going to call you guys the agitators.
It needs to be permanent.
We're here with Seamus and Sheena. Is it Seamus or Shamus?
Seamus.
Seamus and Sheena, you should have a band. I don't know what kind of music.
High fives.
And we've talked about a lot of things. We're all through with callers. Although, if you have a question or a comment and didn't get through yet, the number to call is 503-231-8187. Did we say Tess is on the line? Tess, what's going on?
Yes, hi. Good morning.
Hi.
Thank you guys so much for this conversation. I really love the fact that you're letting tenants know that they can negotiate their rent, and that's the reason why I wanted to call negotiate my rent. I was lucky, and I actually had to shame them first, though, which was kind of sad, but I really wanted to know a little bit more about the morality of rent control, and if some sort of thing could happen, like shaming a tenant or big apartment buildings and stuff, if things like that work. And the second one is the subsidizing of rent is usually for low. I'm complete middle class and suffering. So, and I was wondering if there's anything for the middle class and the people who, can't afford $1,500 a month in rent. So I'll take my answer offline.
Thanks, Tess. What is your take? I mean, now we're fully into the major housing advice lane. Right. What is your take on what Tess was asking?
The morality of rent control.
Because I hear what Tess is saying. It kind of goes back to what Martin was saying about, who are the houseless people and why don't we pay attention to seniors? I still have people saying to me, well, they want to be without a home. They want to live in the street. And I'm like, I bet you have a relative in that situation. Do you talk to them? But I mean, talk a little bit about the morality of it, and also like how it's not just poor people. I'm not even sure what that term means in this context.
Well, I'll say what's immoral, in my opinion. It's immoral to raise the rent by $1,000 or $500. And right now that is legal. I think it's immoral to evict a family from their home, and that's still legal. And so, let's change that.
Okay. The other thing that gets me, I mean, in policy discussions, when someone's asking about ethics and morality, I feel that ethics and morality always has to do with our politics. If you want to convince someone of your position in a policy situation, you really need to show them that it's in their economic interest. And that doesn't have anything to do with ethics or morality, unfortunately. I want to come out and say that when I look on this, I hear so many people complaining about all the people that live on the street. A couple of years ago, I was at a convention, at the White Stag University of Oregon, blah, blah, building. And the only thing that the people at this journalism convention could talk about is, what are you doing? How come everyone in this town is living in the park blocks, right? And when people talk about, you know, the people who are against relocation, like how expensive it is, as a community, it seems like we could put the money in the front end or the back end. Like, you can complain.
Exactly.
You can complain about all the people living in the street, but you better be paying that relo. You better be investing in what keeps people out of the street. This is a place where we really are interdependent, and it's real. It's now. It's, I don't want to say instant karma, because I'm not sure where I'm going with a statement like that. But that, I never hear people talk about that. Like, it really does benefit this homeowner or this property owner to pay those relocation. It actually, it makes you, it keeps your property valuable. It makes your whole town more valuable, and it makes it more livable for everyone. Is that a wrong thing?
No, and in terms of morality, you know, we have a actual housing crisis. It's not just rhetoric. There's people on the street. There's people stressed out all across the city. There's cost burden renters, as the last caller mentioned, you know, who already can't afford their rent, and they fear a bigger rent increase. So that's incumbent upon city council to actually take bold action to fix this issue. And yesterday they said, minus Chloe, they said, you know what, it's not that urgent. We can kick it down the road. We'll talk about it later. They expressed so much concern about the landlords. And so we want them to be aggressive and actually match what's happening with action.
Here's one other thing I want to say about that too, before we go to the caller that we have. Much of the beginning of this year, the city, Portland City Council couldn't even have a meeting, right? Because people shut their meetings down. And I know a lot of these people, and I may or may not agree with every single thing they do, but I know that many of these people were motivated originally by the number of people that froze to death in the streets.
Yeah.
So when I see, if the city council is thinking that this is not a big issue, this is one that's going to turn right around and bite them in the tuchus, because that's exactly where the outrage came from. I think the people are busy, like, harvesting their gardens or doing something else right now. But if people start dying in the streets again, all that shut down party stuff is going to come back. And it always surprises me when people in elected office don't seem to understand the cause and effect of protest movements.
Or the urgency of the situation.
Right. Yeah. So we do have another caller. We have Joan on the line. Did I get that right, Joan?
Yes.
What's up?
Well, depending, I'm not sure. Anyway, that doesn't matter. I'm calling because I can see that there's a lot of confusion around the involvement of the county tax, property tax, which is actually the State Department of Revenue. And they don't get involved in kicking people out of their houses. The sheriff does, and he does whatever he wants, quite frankly. But with respect to the tax department, real estate taxes, there's a program in the statutes that lets you apply for deferred taxes, such that you don't have to pay your taxes until you sell the house if you're over a certain age. And I'm not sure what the age is now. But so I'm going to go out on a limb here and say the sheriff and the banks are working this angle and defaming the county. That's what I have to say about this.
Although the sheriff is the county. It's the county sheriff.
He is not the county. He's a cop.
Well, the sheriff's department is under the auspices of the county. The county controls the sheriffs.
No, they're under the auspices of the state. The state.
Multnomah County. Are we talking about Multnomah County sheriffs?
Police powers come from the state. Police powers come from the state. Period. 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 Police powers come from the state.
Do they come from the state, Joan? I'm just giving you a hard time now. Thanks a lot for calling, Joan. And you know, this issue of who's in charge of what. Back 5 and 6 years ago, when people were being foreclosed from their properties, people deliberately tried to appeal to the Multnomah County sheriffs. And I mean, Joan's right. When people are losing their property in our area, it's the Multnomah County sheriffs that come out and pull them out. And it was interesting to see 5 years ago, and this is, you know, it goes back to Joan's point, It's interesting to see how people try deliberately to shame the sheriffs themselves. There was a case where a woman who was in cancer treatment was dragged out of her house in a foreclosure incident by a county sheriff in the rain and just left on the sidewalk. And the entire bureau was shamed by it. And it's not even run by the same person anymore, right? Mm. So anyway, what were you going
to
say?
Well, the sheriffs, they do the evictions. That's still a thing. And, you know, for those who haven't been to eviction court, I recommend you give it a try. It's one of the most horrific experiences ever, seeing very vulnerable people evicted from their homes in a very emotionless process. And that's like the dark underbelly of this crisis that's happening.
The bureaucracy itself.
Well, specifically eviction court, where people just like you can tell they're vulnerable and they come and they get bad news and, you know, they get evicted into homelessness right there. So, you know, if we want to tackle the problem, maybe we should have someone at eviction court giving these people homes once they're evicted from their homes.
And then once those homes are taken by the state or the county, however you want to put that out, and then they're put out on the auction, they are auctioned on the courthouse steps. And I've actually been there and covered that before. It's shocking. And if you think that the eviction court is shocking, the way those auctions happen is also shocking. They're quiet. There's just a handful of people. They're in the out of doors, right? There's a guy who's an auctioneer. It's disturbing. And you can go to, on the web, you can even find when those are. Go to them.
I've seen it.
I have to think about where to look for that. But again, and you know, I can agree or disagree with Joan about whose fault it is that people may be dispossessed from their houses over taxes. And yet the truth is that our state and local bureaucracies are built to enforce that. Right. And that is the bottom line.
I think Joan's kind of getting to the double standard of, you know, homeowners having more safety nets, whereas when renters are in the same situation where they can't come up with the cash, they're, you know, they don't have those luxuries.
Well, Joan is also saying it's not the tax bureau's fault. And I mean, I think that might just be kind of. Well, that's something that we could have a whole show about. It would probably be really super interesting.
Come back, Joan.
Not exaggerating in the least. So we do have another caller. Let's see if we can get this last couple callers on the line. I see the magical engineering pixie is tap dancing just as fast as he can in there. Before we close out this hour, we're done at the top of the hour. I want to be able to ask you all, how do people participate with you? But let's try to get another caller in. Eric is on the line. Eric, what's on your mind today?
Hey, I got foreclosed, and they said I got a notice. They knew where I was, but they got away with it. And I've just found the papers, and I'm trying to track it down. You might know me. I ran for mayor last time around.
Okay. Well, we hope
I really want to look into it, though.
All right, then. We'll take a look if we can. And sorry that happened. And let us know how it all works out. We're starting to run out of show. And I wanted to give plenty of time to talk with Shamus and Sheena. I know, give me a break. I haven't had enough coffee yet, and it's already going to be 9. How do people participate with you? You really do a lot, from sign painting to dancing at the Apple store and shutting it down. You guys did an adorable thing at the state capitol.
Oh, yeah, we danced at the state capitol.
See, how do people participate?
To Katy Perry's Roar, and we made a rent control version of it.
It was adorable, actually.
Yeah.
Give us the lecture. Who participates with you, and how do we do it?
All are welcome. This is an organization where, you know, I personally came into it, and what I love about PTU is the way that each individual organizer's talents are put to use. You know, as soon as I joined, you know, Margot Black learned that I am a dancer and immediately started staging these events and, you know, through using my specific talent, I was able to, you know, be like a member who was putting forward a lot of like great work. And so there's that. When is our, we don't typically publicize like our working group meetings, but you're welcome to email.
You can contact us.
Us
on Facebook. That might be the easiest way. We're on Facebook, Portland Tenants United.
You can do a search
And just send us a message if you're interested in knowing when all of our working groups are. They're almost every night of the week, so you can pick your favorite. But some more like low-level supporter actions, definitely following us on Facebook, sharing articles. A lot of how we manifest our power is through creating our own media so that we can, you know, middle fingers up and say exactly what we want to say and kind of push the media through, you know, our own stuff that, you know, our last article had a reach of, had a reach of like 150,000 viewers.
That is so cool. So we're at a show. I just want to say thanks for listening, everyone. This is Voices from the Edge Talk Radio. Sitting in for Joanne Hardesty, I am Lisa Loving. Thanks to Portland Tenants United, Seamus Cook and Sheena Sisk. You guys are awesome. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you, Lisa.
Thanks for listening and stay tuned.
Good morning. You're listening to KBOO Portland. It's 8:58. Coming up at 9 o'clock, it's Press Watch. In just a couple of minutes, Teresa Mitchell brings you the news you're not supposed to know. At 9:30, it's Fight the Empire, covers the Rohingya, Catalonia, Russia, and Puerto Rico, plus a solution for North Korea. At 10 o'clock, Air Cascadia, headlines, interviews, and commentary. At 10:15, it's Flashpoints with Dennis Bernstein. At 11 on Between the Covers, Bethany Grabo talks with William Ritter about his new book, The Dire King, and hear the author's thoughts on the supernatural, the many forms of bravery, and the diversity in young adult fiction. And at 11:30, on Black Book Talk, the North Portland Library ladies have family-friendly programs, plus some good curl-up and read ideas. And this great programming is because of members like you and your generosity. If you have not become a member, please go to kboo.fm and click donate. It's 8:59, KBOO Portland.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of Dead Moon Night, Thursday, October 5th at 6 p.m. at the outdoor portico of Portland City Hall. Dead Moon Night is a celebration of the Portland band Dead Moon. An official proclamation declaring that day as Dead Moon Night will be read along with surprise musical guests, refreshments, and an exhibit about Dead Moon. Again, that's Dead Moon Night, Thursday, October 5th at 6 p.m. at the outdoor portico of Portland City Hall, 1221 Southwest 4th Avenue in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.